Everybody today seems to have a house, an addition to their house, a renovation, a driveway full of cars, and a lot of people are wondering, how are they doing it? And maybe the bigger question is, am I supposed to be doing it too? What you're about to hear is not a conversation about getting rich quick, investing in some crazy deal, or how to buy your dream home by the age of 27. It's a very real conversation about pressure, the pressure people feel from family, neighbors, schools, communities, and sometimes from themselves. Rabbi Eliezer Gwertzman has become someone many people turn to for guidance. He speaks very honestly. He was a guest in the past, and his words have been listened to by hundreds of thousands of people across the world. In this episode, he talks very openly about buying homes, living within your means, debt, budgeting, newer neighborhoods, he's a rabbi in Lakewood, financial stress, and the things people don't always think about until it's too late. There were moments during this interview which took place in Lakewood, New Jersey, courtesy of the LRRC. You'll hear more about them. And you could feel the room get absolutely quiet. I think it's because people deep down know exactly what he's talking about. You'll know what I mean. Listen closely and enjoy. Shalom, Rabbi Gwertzman. There's about 100 more people than I'm used to during a podcast, so bear with me. I'd like to begin by getting the Rav's thoughts. If Rabbi Gwertzman was 25, 35 years old, looking to buy his first home, what would be some of the thoughts circling in your head?
I'm not that far removed from being 25, and I remember some of the thoughts that went through my mind. And I think one of the problems of being 25 is that we sort of have a very small view of the world. And very often, when you speak to people who are 25, they think that every problem has a solution, and anything that's happening must be the way it is, because v'haraya, it's happening. And it's only when you get a little bit older do you realize that not every decision a person makes was necessarily a smart decision, and not every person who owns a house is it necessarily mean that they can afford that house. I remember I was once talking to a younger man who his uncle was giving him a tremendous offer to do him a favor and swipe his credit card so that the nephew can get all the airline miles on the uncle's booming business. And I said to him, why doesn't he take the airline miles for himself? I know a lot of people who sit in first class because their business spends a lot of money and they have a lot of miles. The answer is because the bank doesn't want to lend him money. And if they're in the business of lending money at 24% and they don't want to do it, why would you? His response was, he's a very rich man. And I said, how do you know? He said, you see his houses and his cars. So I said, that tells me that he has a lot of debt, but how do you know that he's rich? And this is something that unfortunately many people in their 20s and 30s who are purchasing a home don't realize, which is that just because you see people who own houses, and very often people will say, his wife does the same thing as my wife, and I'm in Kailal just like he's in Kailal, so if he can do it, why can't I? And that logic is not the logic to be used when purchasing a home. A person has to be able to think for himself, think for his own family, and every person is different. Very often I'll be asked, there's 10,000 Talmidim K'nai Nahara and BMG. 8,000 of them are in Kailal, whatever the number is. How do they all make it? And the answer is, every person is different. And for many, there's Nisim Gluyim. I've been pushing some of the writers that if you want to write a serial that should go on for a while, interviewing Goliath about their personal Nisim of how they managed in Kailal, I think it would be a fascinating read. But each individual person has his cheshbon, each couple has their own cheshbon, and it's important when people buy homes to realize that it's not about the street, it's about yourself. And you have to know what works for yourself. Different people, for some people it's Yerushas, for some people it's their father only gives money for a house. For others, the wife may do the same thing as your wife, But your wife got married at 19, she got married at 25, and that's why they can afford a house that you can't. And the last possibility, which unfortunately is why we're here tonight, is because the answer is you're right, they can't afford the house. And just because they made a mistake doesn't mean you have to. So I think these are some of the, I think the biggest point that we have to realize is to live for ourselves. Decisions have to be made based on ourselves, and then from there we can move forward.
What would be your advice to somebody who cynically replies, easier said than done? I have eyes, I see the houses, whether it came through credible means, easy means, whatever means, they have the house, they have the car, whatever it is. It's easy to say, don't look, strengthen within yourself. How can someone go about that practically so that when they walk out of here today, it becomes an exercise versus inspirational talk?
In Krishma, we say, my response to them would be, you have eyes, but you also only have one heart. Too much stress is not good on the heart. It may seem right now like the easy way to go, but if you realize you're going to have to live, as I say in English, live and die with your decisions, and if you're buying a home that you can't afford, it's going to be difficult. I remember when I purchased my first home, so the house I lived in was a bi-level. As many of you know, there's other places to live besides duplexes, by the way. And there's a thing called a bi-level. And a bi-level has three bedrooms on the main floor and then two downstairs. So I remember I was speaking to someone. He said, don't buy a bi-level. You need to sleep with your kids on the same floor. And I was speaking it over with somebody. And he said, just remember what he said. You need to sleep. I would much rather sleep with my kids downstairs than not sleep with my kids with me on the same floor. So the answer is that, yes, in the short term, this may be the story, but in the longer term, to realize that when a person goes and purchases a home that they can't afford, I don't know, one of the township committee members are here, maybe we can handle with him, but the violator of the township takes taxes every single month. They don't take a break. The mortgage, you go handle with them. They also, every month for the next 30 years, will take a mortgage. Utility bills, people forget. Electric in some of these homes is almost the rent of their basement sometimes. And these expenses are real and they don't go anywhere. And if you don't have a way to pay for them and you push yourself into it and you're falling short $500, $1,000, $1,500 a month, but if a person's falling short $1,500 a month, which is not hard to do with a $6,000 a month mortgage, before he turns around by the end of the year, he is $18,000 plus interest in debt, and make that 2 years, $36,000, he's unhelpable. So this is something that people have to keep in mind. And when you think of the consequences, hopefully you're old enough that your seichel can overtake your urges.
I just want to clarify, when the Rav says he bought his first home, it doesn't mean the Rav has a second and third home. It means you swapped homes at some point.
What it means is that I got a Rabbana's job, and after walking for 2.5 miles each way on enough Shabbosim, I got a second home.
And that's what it means. Sold the first.
The first home we sold, yeah.
Okay, good. What's the difference in someone's psyche, their mindset, their stress levels between, let's paint a picture of two different people. Someone who purchases a home might just be making their payments, but they're never really sure. They come a little short, then 1 month, you know, they're right there at the line, versus someone who may have held off, ensured that they were responsible in the decision, perhaps took a less fancy home in the spirit of having some savings, some cushion room. Talk to me about the life difference day to day between those two people.
Okay, so Ellie, this is a question. You came all the way to Lakewood. I think we have to divide this question into two parts. There's a lot of young families here that are learning in Kailo. The Mesiris Nefesh to learn in Kailo is to live on the brink. That is probably the biggest Mesiris Nefesh to learn in Kailo. And there are people who do it very well for a lot of years. And they have Siyata Dishmaya. And many of those people, in the course of their Siyata Dishmaya are able to buy homes, continue to live that way, and do so very, very well for a long time. And that is a lifestyle that I advocate for very, very much. And the Simchas HaChaim that these people have are probably unparalleled and unmatched to definitely, you know, a lot of rich people who never seem to have what they need and are never happy. I happen to notice this the Shabbos. The Rambam Mor Nevuchim writes, such a powerful word. Rambam says that when a person lives with what they have, it says, Eino demeis v'chatzi tavase biyadai. A person doesn't die with half of his taiva in his hands. He says, when a person lives with only what he needs, he can be satisfied because there's a goal that's satisfaction. Once a person pushes over what he needs, then there's no end. You're never going to be happy because there's always more. What I need, now obviously that's, you know, that's up to, you know, what does it mean what a person needs? But just the idea, there are many Yungalite that are living that way. I think what you're sort of discussing is when a person has the finances, the Rebbeinu Shalom gave him the finances to be able to live with a little bit of comfort, and then turns around almost and says, you know what? I can use this money to put away. I can use this money perhaps to invest. Or, you know what? I need that house, whatever that house means, and then turns around and spends it. Very often, you know, sometimes we have to realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us matanas. The Svarim say, not everything that we get for today was meant for today. Could be it's meant for 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And couples don't realize that simchas are coming, bar mitzvahs are expensive. Chasanus, the word expensive doesn't describe, that just describes the first week of the engagement. It doesn't describe the rest of the things. And if a person's bechlal not prepared, they really get thrown off. So first of all, on a month-to-month basis, when a person is just making it, it's very stressful. Chazal tell us that shalom bayis issues come al iskei tefua, when a couple is just managing. So many people, that's the lot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them, and maybe we'll speak about later, how to enhance one shalom bayis even under those circumstances. But when people are making decisions and then pushing themselves to the brink, and especially when they're doing it, so other people should think, when other people are not even thinking, you know, it's a little bit sad. The world says over that in a life cycle, when a person's in his 20s, when a person turns 20 and into their 20s, they're very busy doing everything because people are watching. Finally, you hit 40 and you're like, enough of this. I don't care what people say. I don't care what people see. I'm doing what life I need to do. And you hit 60 and you realize they were never looking. That's Isaac de Velt. But it's important to realize that there are choices. And when we're spending money and we're pushing our money in directions of luxury or bigger houses than perhaps we need, the flip side is it's coming somewhere else. And it may be coming by balancing a budget. And it may be coming, dare I say, that we're forced to send our wives out to work. And therefore, they're not home for the children or the extra hours or the next job or everything else that we're doing to make ends meet. There's a price that we're paying for it. Our children are only in our homes for X amount of years. And when the mother's not home or the father's taking second and third jobs and it's affecting our menuchas hanefesh, it's affecting our relationship with our children, it's affecting our siddurim, is it really worth it? And these are questions that we really have to ask before we jump into things and say, I'll get a second job, the wife will work, my wife will run a business at night instead of everything else. And the question starts, some people need to do it. But the question is it kedai just for a little bit of a bigger home?
We'll be right back to the episode, but first I have a message. You know him well, Shmuel Shaiwitz. When it comes to one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, you don't just need a mortgage guy. You need someone who's going to guide you honestly. It's a crazy market out there, so this is all the more important. And that's why I want to tell you about Shmuel Shaiwitz of Approved Funding. I know people who have worked with Shmuel, and the feedback is always the same. He gives you real personal attention, he explains the options clearly, and he helps you feel confident instead of confused. And in today's market, that matters more than ever. Should you buy now or should you wait? Should you use your home equity? Is it the right time to refinance? Or is the smarter move to do nothing right now? And these aren't small questions. They're going to impact your family, your cash flow, your future, right? Shmuel's been doing this for over 25 years. That's almost older than me. Okay, I just turned 40. Go easy. Okay, over 25 years, he's had thousands of consultations. But what really stands out is the many conversations that did not end with Shmuel doing the mortgage. Again, he's giving advice. He's doing everything you'd expect from a paid consultant. And yet, he gives you advice and he gains nothing from it. But he does gain a lot because he's helped a tremendous amount of people and he does it with a smile. So what does that mean? If he's not doing the mortgage, what did he do? He's guiding you to a solution, a different solution completely, because his focus is not just closing a loan. He's going to give you the right advice, Be'ezras Hashem. Now, of course, you always have to do your due diligence, but I want to tell you, his kind of honesty is rare. So whether you're buying, refinancing, or just trying to understand your options, speak to Shmuel Shaiwitz at Approved Funding. He even has a special URL, approvedfunding.com/koshermoney. You can also just go to Approved Funding, tell him Ellie Langer sent you. Either works. And you'll be in a much better place than if you did this alone. Enjoy. How does someone decide between stretching for a preferred neighborhood versus looking at a more affordable option in a less preferred neighborhood, perhaps not inhabited by all that many people?
Okay, so I think this is an important question. This is a very important and overlooked topic when couples come to buying homes. What is important to us? Ellie used the Lashana preferred. What is preferred about a neighborhood? So Ellie talked about a lot of inhabitants versus not so many inhabitants, which is a very valid point. Now, the question really comes like this. It's very difficult, realistically, to rent a home in Lakewood long-term. Where I grew up in Flatbush and Borough Park, there were many, what they call two-family homes. No one even knew who the landlord was and who the tenant was, right? One of them owned, the other one rented. Why they did what, why some lived upstairs and some lived downstairs, I never figured it out. But you lived there and that was it, that was your home. Most homes in Lakewood, Lemaisa, the Metzius is, when people try to rent, and then the landlord says he's not going to sell, but then he sells, then the Edom comes back from Eretz Yisrael, and people are constantly on the move. So when a couple can afford a home, it is advisable to look to be able to get into a home, even at the cost sometimes of moving to a newer neighborhood and so on. However, there are some very serious issues in moving to newer neighborhoods. I'm a Rav in Coventry. There's Kenina Hora, 425 families there. It's about between 70 and 100 people who move out a year. And I get to keep up with a lot of the guys, especially the ones who move to new neighborhoods, because there's no Rav in the neighborhood that they go to, so they keep up for a while. It's important to realize that a new neighborhood is not so simple. You know, when you have to drive 13 minutes to go to Ma'ariv, it's either Ruchnius or Gasmius is suffering. I'll leave it at that. Right? Either you're not going or you are going and you're gone for an hour. You know, they say that when the wife got off from Shiva, she told her husband, Nachap, that Shachus is not 15 minutes and Ma'ariv is not an hour. But for these people, Ma'ariv is an hour. Right? Till they come, till they go. It's hard to learn. It's hard to... And it's very, very hard, especially for someone who's working, to be yoinik from Ruchnius when there's nobody there. You're davening in a garage in someone's home, and the homeowner doesn't exactly want the olim hanging out in his house on Shabbos afternoon, and the minyan is put together because people are walking 20 minutes in all directions, so they daven right before Shkia. So on these Shabbos afternoons, you finish davening at 11 o'clock, the guy says you could come back 7:45 for Mincha, and you're basically stuck in your home, you don't have a bis medrash, you don't have things, and people suffer tremendously in Ruchnius, in the Aliyah in Ruchnius, over neighborhoods. Rabbi Yerucham in Parshas Lech Lecha says that the problem, the taina that the Torah had on Lot, was that he moved to Sidon for ruchnius, for gashmiistic reasons, whatever, it was Gan Hashem, it was greener pasture, and he didn't take the ruchnistic cheshbonis in mind. It's very important for people to realize that there are real ruchnistic cheshbonis that have to be kept in mind. Another point that's very important, even if you hold that, you know, somehow you can hold it together, what's normal? Ask every person what's normal. The answer is, the way I grew up in my house, that's normal. What I saw growing up, that's normal. And if your children are going to grow up that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur has three people on the couch during the Sana Tekev, that's normal. That's what normal to them will be. And you're raising your children in an environment that you don't consider to be ideal. That is what your children will see, and that's how they do it. Now, again, this becomes a very difficult question. When a person's moving to a neighborhood, and his landlord is throwing him out of the house, and he can move again, and he makes a decision that he has to settle down, and this is what he can afford, that's one question. But when a person is doing it for a swimming pool, right, because he could afford it with a swimming pool, and Be'ezus Hashem, people will come. Emirz Hashem, could be Hashem doesn't want. It's a good question. And if that's the case, we really have to know why we're doing it and for what purpose, and really understand some of the difficulties and growing pains that exist in some of these neighborhoods. When people are younger, you have a person who's moving out to a neighborhood that's right on the cusp and people are starting to move in, and it's just a question of a year or two when he's in Kailul anyway and his children aren't old enough, it's obviously one question. When you're moving out children, it's a different question. So there's a lot of pointers, but it's important. Unfortunately, what I see is most people buy the house based on the exterior factors or the gashmias factors, and then only then think about all the ruchniyistic issues that they now have and sort of say, okay, what could I do? So I think there is a lot that has to be discussed. It's important that a couple has a meir derech that's really guiding them if this is the right thing, not the right thing. Again, buying a house is important, but the question is when, what, where, and what are we giving up, and what is the alternative?
It's very interesting because some might retort and say, kalas, kalas, kashas. I'm building the community. It's early on. Yes, we're on couches during Nisan HaTaykev. It's not ideal, but Rabbi Gortzman, I got in early. I got such a deal. Anyone who comes in after me is going to have to pay twice as much. And the Rav is saying that if it's going to have some sort of hit on your ruchnius, even short term, or it's not the right fit for your family, perhaps stay away.
I don't want anyone to question my yichus. I'm also Jewish, and I also love a good deal. And there are times where, yes, you're 100% right. What I'm saying, though, is that the metzias is these questions are not even dealt with. What couples do is they buy the home first and then deal with it. Now, is that true? Yes, it's definitely true. But there are neighborhoods, by the way, that don't necessarily make it. There are neighborhoods where people are very big pioneers and are living in neighborhoods that didn't exactly turn out with the crowd that they hoped for and wanted. And sometimes the writing was even on the wall. They just didn't want to see it. Other times, they were the first one there. So, yes. Now, when a couple's 26, 27, when the couple's in their mid-20s, and, you know, the worst comes to worst, and again, he's in Kailul, and worst comes to worst, they'll have to sell and move elsewhere and make $200,000 in the process. That's obviously one discussion. When a person just went out to work and feels that he's on a roller coaster going down ruchnius-wise, and then on top of that, he takes away the only lifeline he has, and now he doesn't even have a place or bis medrash to learn in, and after his hour and 20-minute commute, he has to commute 15 minutes to shul and expect to be able to stay up for the hour shir. It's not going to happen. And then if that's the case, he really has to ask himself, is this the right thing for me?
Assuming someone did make the wrong decision, invested in a home that isn't the right fit for one of the many reasons the Rav shared, is that a life sentence? Has the Rav spoken and seen people get out of a bad deal and move to somewhere else?
So getting in and out of real estate is not cheap. Anyone who wants to know the exact numbers, there's a whole host of people outside. You can ask and they'll fill you in. Is it a life sentence? No, nothing is a life sentence. Have people had to pick up their families and move? Yes. Are there people that take real Yuridus and Ruchnius because of it and then ultimately catch themselves and figure it out? And yeah, 100%. Nothing in this world is a life sentence. As long as we're breathing, as long as our neshama is still inside of us, we have abilities to make changes and so on. But we also daven every day, Al Tavienu Lidei Nisayin. No one as a human being wants to put themselves in a situation where their ruchnius becomes very, very difficult to maintain.
Artificial intelligence is everywhere, powering mind-blowing tools, smart systems, and yes, plenty of hype. But here's the real question. How can AI actually help your business? How are your competitors already using it to build smarter apps and streamline operations? That's where Bitbean steps in. They take your big ideas and bring them to life, using the latest AI advancements to make custom software more powerful and more affordable. So whether you need an app, a robust backend system, or a full-scale digital solution, Bitbean can design it, build it, and help it grow. So visit bitbean.com to start the conversation and tell them Ellie from Kosher Money sent you. You'll get premium software without the premium price tag. The link's in the show notes, QR code on the screen. You know what to do. What are the numbers? I know in previous conversations we've discussed certain numbers as it relates to home buying. What should people keep in mind in 2026 or whenever they're watching this over the next couple of years? Someone's never bought a home before. What should they be keeping in mind?
I don't know if everyone in the back of this room from LSJ is going to 100% agree with the statement that I'm going to say. I'll give that as akdama. Although I am a very big believer that people have to spend within their means 100% and so on, sometimes when it comes to buying a home, if a person is going to put it on a green ledger and expect every dollar to work, they'll probably never buy a home. That's the metzius. At the end of the day, at some point in our lives, we have to put a roof over our children's heads. And therefore, sometimes, within reason, we sometimes have to stretch ourselves a little bit in order to be able to buy a home. What are the numbers? Honestly, I have no idea. I only asked about it before Pesach, so I'm assuming that I'm outdated in the real estate market. But bottom line is, it's not so much the number as much as figuring out what a person could afford roughly. Including in what a person could afford is, let's say you have a younger man who's in Kailo. Right now he's not in a night koilel, and he doesn't want to go to a night koilel. He's chazering what he learned first and second seder, and he doesn't want to do that. At the end of the day, if he needs to, he can go to a night koilel. So, you know, that's something perhaps to keep in mind. It's not ideal, but lemaisa, buying a home at a certain point, again, I'm not talking to couples that are in Shana Rishayna, but at a certain point, it is an important thing that a family has to figure out. And therefore, sometimes we do have to adjust. That's part of what we're doing. But at the same time, so what I would say is to buy a car, to go on vacation, to do any of these things, I think the numbers have to stim 100%. And if they don't, you shouldn't be doing it. You know, a luxury car or something like that. I'm not talking about a car just for basic transportation. But, you know, to do something extra, I think a home is a little bit of an exception. Having said that, if I can mention a zach that unfortunately I see so often, so many people have this zach in their mind that I'm going to buy a home. It has to be the place that I'm going to live, mitzvah Shem, for the next 50 years. I don't like doing construction because it's very dirty. And therefore, I need a home big enough. Let's see how many married couples could I have for Pesach. Okay, it has to be X amount, and the size has to be that. And I think when people do that, it's probably the biggest mistake and the biggest reason why people fall into trouble. If I could explain why a little bit in Pashto numbers. A person goes, let's say, and buys a home somewhere in Jackson for 1,500 square feet, and he has 3-4 children, and the violet works, he can fix the garage, whatever it is, and it cost him $750. Is my numbers right? Lower? $600,000. Versus buying himself a nice big home for $1.3 million and making sure that, you know, he could, whatever it is. The difference in mortgage is tremendous, because I assume he's putting whatever money he's putting down, that's part of the down payment. So let's just say he has a $300,000 to put down, so he's ending up with a $350,000 mortgage in the first one versus a $900,000 mortgage in the second one. The tax bill is so much more. Now, the person will argue that at some point I'm going to need the money. But the answer is, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets it up, he very often gives us things as we need them, not today for then. Noisif Lazer, what a lot of people don't realize is as follows. Once you purchase a property, okay, so now I bought a house, I'm in at 650, the house will continue to go up, right? Because that's what happens. So now I'm 45 years old and I'm a Rebbe in a local cheder, but the chadarim have to raise their salaries because the 32-year-old Rebbe, who's buying a house right now for $1.2 million for 1,500 square feet, again, we're in, if Mashiach doesn't come, 2040, whatever it is, and therefore, I'm still paying that same money. Once I purchase a home, I'm sort of locked in. Now, at some point, yes, I'm going to have to make an addition, but at that point, when I make my addition, I'm locked in at the old rate, plus the addition, and now I'm only paying for what I need, which is the difference. So financially, going smaller at the beginning, A, there's a certain siyata d'shmaya that you have, that what I need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides, what I don't, not necessarily. B, you're locking yourself in already now that no matter how much prices go up, you're locked in. When you're going to have to do your addition later, you only have to pay for the difference of the addition per se, and so on. And therefore, it's very kedai. A third thing that I could point out, unfortunately, in the world we live in, you get bored of your house after a while. So if you start off at 3,800 square feet, at some point you're going to need 6,000 because the kids are going to come and it's just not going to work. If you start off at 15, you'll be happy at 38. But if you start off at 38, at 29, by the time you're 60, it's not going to work for you. So you're going to have to do that addition anyway, so may as well just start off a little bit smaller. And that's the bottom line. And Lemaisa, when people do that, that's when the numbers, Pachas Yoiser, I got to rent anyway. Rent is not cheap. Owning is not cheap. It's another 1,000, okay, I could put it together. A lot of the money that I'm putting down extra is going to pay for the principal of the mortgage and it's coming back to me. And when we stay small and we stay within reason, very often, even on more minimal budgets, again, some people, it's not negayah for, but for a lot of people, as long as you keep your eye on the ball and realize what you're doing, you'll do much better than just going all out.
Sounds interesting. Someone with less bedrooms sleeps better at night.
For sure. Unless it's the woman who had to clean all the bedrooms and is less tired with less bedrooms, she might not sleep as well.
In terms of budgeting, assume a couple's driving home from the event and they said, you know, Taka, Rabbi Gwertzman had a lot of good things to say. What are we doing about it? How are we going to tighten up? How do we make sure that when we do want to buy our first home, maybe in a year, 3 years, 5 years from now, we're setting ourselves up for success?
Okay, so I think there's two parts to budgeting, and there's the Aleph plus in budgeting, and then we'll call it the Beis minus of budgeting. Many financial coaches ask of the Olam to have an exact cheshbon of what comes in, what goes out, what you spend every week to sit down, work through the cheshbonos. For a lot of us, that sounds way too scary. I have to sit there Motzei Shabbos, my wife could ask me why I bought a coffee on the way to Isha, and it's not happening. And therefore, because of that, people run away. It It's not as scary as it sounds, but we'll even go with that hanacha. I think it's important for every family to know how much money of their budget, first of all, what's coming in and what's going out, number one, just posh, not even weird, and how much of your budget is necessary spending and how much of your budget is discretionary spending. I think it's a chayv kaddish for every family to just have a cheshbon. If you put it down on paper and you think you're so poor, and all of a sudden you realize that $25,000 is going to discretionary spending because my ben is man on vacation, which was kedai, and then to just do this was zicha kedai, cost me $5,000. And then my going out cost me, I don't realize it, but I do it twice a month, and it costs, well, every person can feed their mishigasin. We're all entitled to mishigasin. We're all entitled to discretionary spending. But sometimes when people put it all together and realize how much it is, half the Yetzirah to spend the money is gone as soon as you see that number on a paper. Really? I remember once a person telling me, you spent over $50,000 on discretionary spending. And then he said, you know, if I would have, for 5 years, my first 5 years of marriage, put away half of that, I'd be living in my own house now. And now I think I can't afford a house. Just posh it to see what it is. And even people who are falling short, there are people who are $20,000 in debt. Credit card bills, 24% interest, they're getting zapped with $5,000 a year in interest. That they're in a thing, that they're in a trap that they can't get out of. Do you realize that if you fall $500 a month for 3 years behind, you're $20,000 in debt? Now, $500 a month is the difference between a younger man taking a tutoring job and not taking a tutoring job. When your boss asks you to do something and you decide you weren't in the mood, and then you realize that if you would just do that, you wouldn't be in debt, it changes the whole dynamic. But we live without a cheshbon. We don't realize what things are costing us, where we're falling short and why. And memela, we make decisions that are very not seicheldik because of the fact that we just didn't stop and think. And therefore, to go back to what I said, I think it's imperative that every couple at least know what's coming in and what's going out, number one. And number two, there is a maila to real budgeting and to be able to see what's what, and then to figure out ways how to cut back, how to be able to put aside money, perhaps invest it, and be able to have for chasenes, be able to have for simchas, and so on.
The Rav mentions a couple talking about their finances, budgeting. What happens when there's friction, a disagreement, more than just a coffee on the way to yeshiva? Is that normal? And if yes or not, how do you get through that peacefully?
Fortunately, we were all raised in yeshiva. And part of being raised in yeshiva, especially in out-of-town yeshiva, is we have hashpahs from the yeshiva dining room, especially like late on a Friday night with the chant. And if you go there into a yeshiva dining room, you will see that the basic conversation that people have is that anyone who doesn't agree with them is crazy, right? You speak to an average 16, 17, 18-year-old bacher, they believe that 9/10 of the world belongs in Bellevue. Yes, I did grow up in Flatbush. That's the psych ward in Manhattan that we all were told that we belonged in. 9/10 of the world belong there. The only reason why they're not there is because there's poshut not enough beds, so they ration the beds and they give it to the people that need it most. But on a serious note, the idea of growing up that someone could have a different opinion than I have and that their opinion is respected is something that we're not trained on as a young child, right? Our parents tell us what to do, and if we disagree, it's chutzpah, and then we move on. You speak to a bacher in yeshiva, right? Any yeshiva that learns a half a omid less than them as man, they're going to be amiratzim the whole life and they're never going to know anything. If they learned in Omid too much, they pashut don't know how to learn. It's pashut the Yevanim wouldn't have even been goyzer on the Torah in that yeshiva because it's pashut not Torah. Right? This is the way people think and this is the way people talk. And then you get married and lemaisa, the metzias is, your spouse does not think the way you do. And I'm sure there's plenty to talk about high schools. We'll just say one word. Everyone else is a neb. But akoponim, the bottom line is, at the end of the day, we're not morgul in appreciating other people's opinions. 99% of the time, when spouses disagree over finances, it's two different opinions and two different ways to look at things. I used to tell Chassanim, when I taught Chassanim before they got married, you know, if you had your way and managed your checkbook exactly the way you want, not a single dining room chair in your dining room would match, right? Because we can't afford it. Your wife comes and says, no, the dining room chair's got to match. I'm sorry. We got to figure this out. Who's right in the conversation? If the wife, who has an eye for nice things, puts every nice thing in the house, that's where $25,000 in credit card debt comes from. So we need a husband to sort of sometimes balance it. Yes, and I know sometimes it's fakert. It's the wife that's being careful and the husband that's not. But my point is that as a couple, two spouses very often are coming with very valid points. And this is not only in finances. This is in a lot of issues. When it comes to meistis, the wife very often is busy with the midas tivus, and the husband wants the most yeshivish and moist possible that he thinks he can get into. Different nekudas, and they're all valid nekudas. One of the things we have to learn is to listen and to respect and to understand that our spouse has a point and we can disagree with somebody without it getting personal. And when we do that, we very often develop a very happy medium. I was thinking about this recently. You know, you have 10 children that all grew up in the same house, and the maisa, as the years go on, they all have different spending habits. Some of it is tchunas hanefesh, and some of it is based on the spouses. A couple develops a happy medium that works for both, and that's really communication and others in how it works, but I think the beginning of it is to understand that just because your wife is disagreeing with you, it's not a question of getting her to be maskim to you, it's getting both of you to understand where the other person is coming from and bringing both arguments to the table and figuring out a solution.
All right, quick pause here to thank one of the sponsors that help make these episodes possible. It's a new sponsor, and you know me, I only promote that which I've used myself. If you own a home or a building anywhere around the Five Towns, Long Island, or New York City, this is something worth paying attention to. Gold Star Mechanical is a trusted HVAC company based right here in the Five Towns, and they handle pretty much everything when it comes to heating and air conditioning, whether that's repairs, maintenance, or full installs and replacements. So if your AC stops working in the middle of a heat wave, if your heat goes out in the winter, or if you're just trying to upgrade an older system, they've got a team that deals with this every single day. They're not just in the Five Towns. We're talking Brooklyn, New York City. And what I hear consistently about Gold Star is that they are known for reliable service and straight answers. They're not the kind of company that makes things complicated or hard to deal with. They show up, they diagnose the problem, they explain to you in English what's going on, and they stand behind their work. Their customer service piece, shout out to Dan and Sherry, is something people really appreciate. They service everything from rooftop units, which I hear is called RTUs, to traditional central air systems. So whether it's an office, a house, or a larger building with multiple systems, they've got the experience to handle it. Now, one thing they stress a lot, and this makes a lot of sense, is that regular maintenance is the cheapest way to avoid major problems later. Think about it like your car. If you never change the oil, the car will keep running for a while. But eventually, something big breaks, and suddenly you're dealing with a huge repair bill that could have been avoided. HVAC systems are the same exact way. If you stay on top of preventative maintenance, your system runs more efficiently, you avoid those surprise breakdowns, and you're much less likely to get hit with that emergency repair at the worst possible time, like the hottest day of the summer or the coldest day or night of the winter. So right now they're offering a special promotion for new preventative maintenance customers. take advantage. And when you enroll in the preventative maintenance program, you're going to save 10% off your first year. And the nice thing is, it's not a one-size-fits-all plan. They're going to build a custom maintenance program based on your building, the number of units you have, and what your system actually needs. So whether you've got a single system in a house or multiple units across a larger property, they're going to tailor it to fit your needs. I actually just used them. I replaced the entire HVAC in my house because on a hot summer day, it felt like a hot summer day, and I did not want that. They were amazing. They went above and beyond. Josh and the entire team, fantastic. Highly recommend. I've started recommending them to people. So if you want to check them out, we're going to put their information in the show notes. They have a website. It's called goldstarmechanical.com. They have a phone number. It's on screen and in the show notes, 516-246-5252. Again, 516-246-5252. Don't wait for the day that is too late. Office at goldstarmechanicalny.com. Gold Star Mechanical, reliable HVAC service for the five towns, Long Island, and New York City. Did you know that because of Kol Chabad, over 47,000 families in Israel have reliable access to nutritious food? Yes, it's true. That's hundreds of thousands of people being helped because of people like you. Parents shouldn't have to skip meals so their children can maybe eat. And Kol Chabad is on the front lines. They've been around since 1788. It's crazy, right? The percentage of every dollar donated that actually goes to help the poor and sick is very high. Why? Because Kol Chabad keeps administrative costs to a minimum. They try to avoid high rents and have an army of volunteers, great people across the world, actually. But they can't do this alone. So give what you can to our brothers and sisters in need. Go to kolchabad.org/koshermoney and give what you can. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Links in the show notes. And now back to the episode.
I was in a meeting today where someone had voiced an opinion, which I lightly suggested was preposterous. I didn't say it like that, but, and it turns out the person had meant the complete opposite of what I had thought. Comes to mind having a conversation underlining the word understanding, because not everything expressed is viewed initially by the other person from the other person's shoes.
And I would say more. Even if he meant exactly what you thought, it's very possible he would have had a point. Now, it might not be the right thing in the right time and whatever, and that's why companies all have meetings, even though every person who's sitting by the meeting hates being there, right? But you have them because when you bring ideas to the table, it's usually never one person's idea that ultimately ends up being the idea that the company goes with. And that's sort of the idea. I think if individual spouses appreciated, looked at disagreements not as personal disagreements, but rather as difference of opinion that together we have to work through, they would reach a place that really works for both of them.
Let's assume someone tightens up, lowers their standards, starts saving. What would you recommend to them so that they don't easily touch it and put that money into a risky investment in the Thursday night coffee room?
Very important thing when we talk about investing to realize there's a lot of money in Klal Yisrael. And when there's a good investment, people b'derech klal don't come to poor people like us asking for money to invest. They go straight to the big boys and they get a lot of money very quickly. The people who come to us more often than not are people who went to the big boys and for whatever reason, after giving it and putting it through a risk assessment and all kinds of other things, came out the other side that this money is not kedai. Case in point, they first had COVID tests, requiring everyone to do COVID tests. So there was a lot of money invested in COVID tests. I was writing a lot of heter iskas for people who were investing in COVID tests. The big gevirim were doing it. All of a sudden, it stopped. About 3 weeks later, I started getting phone calls from Rabbeim Koyli Yungalait. This is Gevaldik Azach. Gevir made a lot of money off COVID tests, and all you have to do is take out a line of credit against your house. You'll be able to make all your chasanas. You'll make the money. I'm telling you, this guy made, that guy made. Yeah, and why aren't they doing it anymore? Because it got to the point that COVID tests became obsolete and the risk became too great. And it's extremely important to keep your money. If you don't do this full time, you don't have a staff the way the Gevirim do to be able to assess risk and return on your money, it's just not for you. Yes, we all know that guy in the corner of Coyle, in the Coyle, who did something that he probably shouldn't have done and is now living a nice life, sitting in Coyle or whatever, but he talks about it. The other 95 guys don't, because they're too embarrassed. And it's very, very important that if a person is going to invest money, which is a good thing, to know to do it responsibly, to do it conservatively, and any person who comes over to you and is offering you to invest, first question you want to ask, why me? Why not the big boys? That's the first question you have to ask, and you have to be very, very careful.
We spoke about home buying. What would be your recommendation slash advice to somebody in their 20s and 30s as it relates to wise financial decisions? You know, anything ranging from life insurance, et cetera.
I don't know that I'm the best person to answer that question, because I don't know if all the financial decisions that I made in my life were so wise.
What can people learn from the mistakes?
Well, then I went into Ravana, so...
Can I interest you in COVID tests?
It may be coming back, you know. Who knows?
Why me? Why not the big boys?
So I think if I could give the advice, I think the biggest advice would be think the future, don't only think today. Think big, look at yourself to the future, and to realize the big side. I heard this once many years ago from Gedalia Litke when he came to Lakewood. He said over, he hasn't said it recently, but it's a tremendous aside. Before you macher avek, think about it at least for 10 minutes. He said, you know, you know that guy in shul that you had growing up that used to make a bris in his house instead of a hall, and you felt so bad for him because never he had to do it in his house? Don't feel bad for him, because he doesn't feel bad for himself. There's a certain gevura that it takes, and it doesn't happen in a day, when a person can live above the world around him. When a person is living, making decisions based on the world around them, that decision is not so justified. My shver always says over, there was a guy who once saw an owner outside building a big house. So he stopped his car and he told the guy, why don't you do this, this, and this, and this? So the guy says, excuse me, it's my house. He says, yeah, but you built it that I should see, so I'm telling you how to do it, right? If a person's living his life for yenna, it's really a horrible life. You can never make yenna happy. And if you're building a house that's 500 square feet bigger than the next biggest house in the neighborhood, it's only going to last for so long, and eventually you're going to be miserable. How many of these old gevurim, you go to these, like, you know, old mansions, and they show you that he blocked that window because there was a house over there. So you have this guy who's living in a house. I don't know, I live in a house. All my windows are open. I have no problems. I can look out any window I want, right? I try to live for myself. I don't care what my neighbor does. It doesn't interest me. Now, there are times where people have to make decisions for their children who are younger, right? You can't expect your child to wear $8 sneakers if the other 24 kids in the class are wearing something else. But again, that's a decision that I made for my child, because this is what my child needs, and it was made out of seichel. But when I'm making decisions based on what people are going to say, who's going to be mishadach with me, if I don't have this, then I'm going to this, and if I don't do this, that's where we get in trouble. So I think if the financial advice that I could give the olam is think for yourself, don't let, to a certain extent, yes, but the more we could internally work on ourselves, that we're doing things for ourselves and not for yenna, the happier we'll be, and the more financially secure we'll be as well.
Beautiful. Last question. What didn't I ask that I should have asked that we can impart on this wonderful audience?
Okay, so I do want to mention one thing halachically, which is very important. Many of you are looking to buy homes and get mortgages. Very important. Any time that you have to involve anyone in your mortgage, whether it's co-signing or whatever other arrangements may be made, even co-signing a heter iska is required. It's a shaila of ribis, and it's an important thing. Make sure you know it yourself. Tell your friends. Too many times people buy homes, and unfortunately, they're over ribis in the process. Chazal tell us, mishalava beribis mechasav mismaitetin. We're talking about having siyata d'shmaya and figuring it out and just getting it just right. It's important that we realize that that's an issue. I also do want to mention LRRC, although there are numerous banks here, most of them do have proper heter iskas, does not take achrayas on any of the banks that are here. It's important, whatever bank ultimately you decide to use, to speak to a Rav that is a baki in these halachas and make sure that there's no Yiddish ownership, that there's a proper heter iska in place if there is, and that, again, a person is not going into the biggest investment perhaps in his life and doing it under questionable terms. I don't think that's what Eli meant when he asked the question.
Exactly what I meant, actually. I was wondering when the Rav was going to bring up heter iska. What else? What didn't we cover that?
I think we covered basically everything, and I'll just end off with a maisa. I remember when I lived in Coventry, and the same way it is today, it was then when it was all Yungalite. All anyone spoke about, you know, the women in the circles, was about that they have to move out and they have to buy a house and they have to afford a house and where they're going and so on and so forth. And I remember there was a person there who went and bought a house that they probably couldn't afford. And people asked them, like, how you plan on doing this? Like, everyone figures it out. And they went and they bought it. And they still live there. The anguish, the pain, the sleepless nights, the stress that this couple went through over the years because of the doing something that they couldn't afford, I can't begin to tell you. And this is something to keep in mind. I also do want to mention, we mentioned that Agavdik openly. Very often when you handle with a mortgage broker, they'll show you the taxes, they'll show you the insurance, they'll show you the amount for the principal and the interest and all that. They don't always show you the utility bills. They don't always, you know, sometimes the, you know, it's totally what the bank really cares about as far as what you're eligible for, as far as the income, that's that they do show you. They don't necessarily tell you about utility bills. They don't necessarily show you about repairs. So those two things are something to keep in mind. It's also worthwhile to at least ask a guy when he gives you a rate, make sure the points aren't too high. A lot of first-time home buyers don't realize, just to explain what points is, there's one thing, you know, what the rate is, 6 point whatever, and then there's something called points, which is the amount of money that they charge you up front. There are certain mortgages that will take a point and a half, which means a percentage of the mortgage. So if you borrow $500,000 and it's 1 point, they're charging you $5,000 just for Shalom Aleichem. Very often that's to cover the broker's fee and whatever. It's important that you are shopping, I don't want to say shop around. It's sometimes complicated. As Reb Menashe mentioned in the intro, one of the services that LRRC does is really be able to help you based on your situation and income and how you make your money, especially if your money is not, let's say you're making money in kollel checks. Some banks count it, some don't. So that becomes a very important part of the process. But not to forget to actually realize as a first-time home buyer, there's not just a percentage rate that's out there, and this is what everyone does. And you know, there are hidden fees as well. And at least to ask, are there points? Are there not points? What are the fees up front? And as far as affordability is concerned, really, what's this house going to cost me? There are some homes, because of the way they're built, that the electric is a fortune. The heat in the winter is a fortune. Can I afford it? Is that going to change? If I'm going into this aldas that I'm $1,000 behind, but I could go to a night coil and I forget to chesh benois that there's another $800 monthly for utilities, and every once in a while there's going to be maintenance costs, that could throw me over the top. So that's also something just to keep in mind.
Wishing everyone tremendous hatzlacha, and thank you, Rabbi Gwertzman, for sharing your wisdom with
Can
us.
Can I ask you, Eli, one question? Is there anything that you would like to share with the Olam that I didn't get to?
That is a good question. I do have one piece to share with the Olam, in that when you're unsure about something, right? I think it's important to have someone in your life, whether it is the Rav, whether it's a professional in the industry that you can speak to, because no one is expected to know every answer. And there's only so much that ChatGPT is going to advise you.
What is that?
It's in Flatbush. It hasn't made it out here yet. This idea that you don't know everything, and the sooner you come to that realization, you'll be better off for it, because there are people that live in whatever sugya you're inquiring about, yom and v'layla, and they're there to guide you, whether it's a cousin in the business, whether it's a professional, whether it's your Rav. If you're unsure, seek out guidance, because I think learning from other people's mistakes is the quickest path to success with Hashem's help.
Okay, thank you very much, and I wish everyone hatzlacha, Bez Hashem. Everyone should be able to, they say, karka plenty leplenty. 40 days before we were born, the karka that we're supposed to get was predetermined. My bracha is everybody should find their shidduch. Thank you very much.
My thanks to Rabbi Eliezer Gwertzman for sharing such practical and grounded advice about buying a home, living within your means, avoiding financial pressure, and making decisions based on what's right for your family, not based on what other people are going to say. Fantastic episode. Please share it with friends, family, a neighbor. Huh? Thanks to the Lakewood Resource and Referral Center, the LRRC. I've gotten to know them. They put together a fantastic event, and they put a lot of hard work and dedication into this event and all the work that they provide to many Jewish communities. Visit lrrcenter.org if you want to learn more about them. We'll even have our esteemed editor, Jody, put the URL on the screen so you can jot that down. We'll put it in the show notes. A special shout out to the Adera girls for all their help at the event. There's your shout out. So many of you listen without subscribing. So please fix that by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your news. Shout out to anyone listening on Nucky Radio 24/6. Click like, leave a comment on whatever platform allows you to do that. It really helps us reach more people. Video on Apple Podcasts, it might be there. Don't know, but you'll check it out. I have a surprise offer for you. Look. We spend a lot of time on the show talking about what matters, family, community, the people we love. And there's something I want to tell you that I think fits right into that message. It's called, bum ba da bum, it's called Paintbrush. Here's what they do. You send them a photo of your Zaidi, your Safta, your rabbi, a spouse, a Rebbe from 200 years ago, a parent, both parents, a couple on their wedding day. You get the point. And they turn it into a hand-painted oil painting on a canvas. It's not printed. It's not AI. It's a real artist with real oil paint, brushstroke by brushstroke. And the thing is, it works for almost any photo, old, blurry, even black and white. You're going to be surprised at what you get. It's kind of cool to see something real in such a world full of artificial intelligence. You get to approve a preview before they ship it to you, so there are zero surprises, and it arrives at your door in 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes even sooner. It's the kind of gift that makes people cry when they open it. So think birthdays, anniversaries, Yom Tov, Lezecher Nishmas, or honestly, just because you want a beautiful painting. There's no wrong occasion for something this cool. Go to paintbrushstudio.com, paintbrushstudio.com. Again, the third time, paintbrushstudio.com. They have dozens of before and after paintings right there in the gallery. You'll see exactly what I mean. And because you're a Kosher Money listener, you're going to get $75 off any order. Just use code KosherBrush. That is KosherBrush. One word, KosherBrush at checkout. There's no expiration for now. It's always honored. Head over to paintbrushstudio.com, code KosherBrush. If you're on a smart screen, scan the QR code right now. It's also owned and managed by my big bro, Avi Langer, so you are in very good hands. Get a paintbrush painting now. A big thank you to our sponsors who make these episodes possible. When it comes to mortgages and major financial decisions, having the right guidance matters. That's why I recommend Shmuel Shaiwitz from Approved Funding. With over 25 years of experience, he helps people understand what they can realistically afford and guides them through the process with honesty and clarity. You heard it in this episode. It's more important than ever to ensure you're doing things right. Speak to Shmuel at approvedfunding.com/koshermoney and tell him your friend Ellie sent you. It's also sponsored by Bitbean. We've been telling you about them. If your company needs custom software solutions, you want to build powerful systems, you're still inside Excel sheets, you want it to be done with elite talent at a fraction of the cost it used to be, go to bitbean.com. Tell them Ellie sent you. You deserve to have a company that runs like it should in 2026, 2027. Stop using Google Sheets, Excel Sheets, outdated logistic platforms. Bitbean.com is your answer to that. Our thanks to Gold Star Mechanical. They're based here in the Five Towns, another home-related sponsor. They handle HVAC repairs, installs, and maintenance across Long Island and New York City. I've used them myself and have had a great experience. They're reliable, professional, and easy to work with. They're also very nice, which I love. New maintenance customers can get this 10% off their first year. So that is one more amazing referral from me. And thank you to Kol HaChabad, supporting families across Eretz Yisrael with food, financial help, and critical assistance. Do not forget our families and friends in Israel. Your donation goes directly to people who need it most. This ad was sponsored by an anonymous fellow out in California who believes in Kol Chabad's mission. I've been to their pantry out in Israel. They have so many. You can actually get involved, volunteer when you're in Israel. Check them out, kolchabad.org. Links are in the show notes. Thank you, our listener, for supporting our sponsors so we can keep bringing you these episodes. I actually heard from a real fine out in Eretz Yisrael that his son, I believe, Mutti, loves our ads. So shout out to Mutti and his brother. I heard you guys get along really well. Super excited to have met your dad this past Shabbos at Rabbi Farkas's house. But that's some inside baseball for you. I now want to talk about debt. Debt is a reality for many families. Kosher Debt Help offers free, honest guidance with no strings attached. They're a nonprofit focused on helping you find the right path forward. Check the show notes. I want you to reach out to kosherdebthelp.org if this is something that you need in your life. For budgeting, investing, or general financial guidance, visit livingsmarterjewish.org for free coaching. They help put together that amazing event you saw here in Lakewood. Thousands have already benefited. You can also check out hachzik.com. You can get a free Pele Yoyetz Sefer. They just started today at the day of this recording. I believe yesterday? No, today. Today. They started the new Sefer Volume 2. You can get a free Pele Yoyetz Sefer. Comment your favorite quote from this episode with Rabbi Gwertzman, and you'll be entered for the chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Congrats to YouTube user Benya Habenya 3923 from our last episode. He won an Amazon gift card. By the way, share this episode with family. Do it on your WhatsApp status or group chat. And remember, as Rabbi Gwertzman said, just because someone owns the house doesn't mean they can afford the house. See you next time.
Living L'chaim.